With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
I miss the honky-tonks, Dairy Queens and 7-Elevens. You got it, you got it. Pete Donaldson here. This is the Football Ramble. I'm joined by Jim Campbell.
Hey-o.
And Luke.
You got it right first time. Woohoo! Rejoice.
Yeah, that's a pub song. Welcome to the Football Ramble. Three boys back in the studio talking about football and that.
Welcome to Per Mertesacker's retirement party.
He looked very old in that match. First things first, Jim Campbell, a fine jumper.
Thank you.
Covered in koi, he is.
Yep.
Very coy, very coy man. And a nice jumper as well. A kind of a threaded woolen number.
This is like I'd call this a cable knit.
A cable knit. So that's what
you've
I was.
Got a lovely cardigan on with both shoulder and elbow pads.
Yeah, but one of the buttons is missing, so I'm not quite so well-dressed as you guys. So, let's crack straight into some FA Cup action. Nottingham Forest, the Tricky Trees versus Arsenal. This was the first third-round defeat for Arsenal since 1996. They did a Newcastle, Jim.
They did.
It's yay!
Not a great performance. I don't want to put anyone's nose out of joint or sort of, you know, be too sort of reactionary about it. But I don't actually think Arsenal were very good at the weekend.
Do you reckon?
No, I think the thing about the performance is obviously it was abject in every regard. And full credit to Forest, they were brilliant. They played their part, as a certain Ramble legend would say. But it's an inexperienced team. But the errors are incredibly, incredibly basic. For the first goal, that wall playing everyone on side, you are effectively giving someone a free punch with that. It was so obvious.
The media on Arsene Wenger, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. And you think, I know that Wenger likes his players to sort of express themselves, but you think, are they being drilled in even the basic things if the younger, more inexperienced players that don't naturally have that in their locker from their experience of just being a professional footballer can't do simple things like that? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is ridiculous.
I mean, they absolutely capital R ridiculous.
That wall, the positioning of that wall and the way it was set up, and that is under 10 stuff. I mean, you don't need to put a wall there in that position. David Ospina should have that covered anyway.
Yeah.
And if you are going to put a wall there, which, again, to repeat, you shouldn't, but if you are, take your line off that. So at least you're there to defend it if you need to, you know.
Yeah.
I know I've had a little bit of a cheap shot of Mertesacker there in the intro, but I found the way that Ben Brereton was able to bully Holding, who doesn't seem to have an awful lot in his locker at the moment, and Mertesacker, who was a proud, brilliant servant for Arsenal and a fantastic player in his day, who's now, sadly, his best days are behind him. The way he was able to do that suggests that Mertesacker really can't perform at any sort of level anymore. I mean, if he can't use his experience, I know he's not got any pace, but if he can't use his experience to outwit and to deal with an 18-year-old championship forward who scored no more than a handful of goals in his entire career, then you really wonder where he's going to go from here. I know he's got something lined up for next season. He's not going to be playing anymore. But that, to me, really typified the entire affair. Yeah. I mean, Forrest was just so encouraged over and over again by Arsenal's lack of application.
Yeah. I mean, as well, not only, obviously, there's young players playing, but that excuse only goes so far. Because you've got to look at players like Danny Welbeck and Theo Walcott, who should be busting a gut to prove that they should be in that team. They should be starting more. And clearly, there's just no desire there.
Walcott looked particularly pedestrian.
He's got his eye on a move, clearly. He's probably just accepted now that his Arsenal career isn't going to last for very much longer and is effectively possibly down tools, and that's incredibly frustrating. One good thing is, I suppose, it gives other people a chance. Arsenal have won it a lot. No non-league teams in the cup at this point, so servants to the narrative.
Yeah. well, this has been a feather in Arsenal's cap for a few seasons now.
Yeah.
This has rescued him from being fired a few times.
It's been the only remaining stitch in the cap.
Very much.
it's been the one reliable stitch in the cap, so you can still wear the cap on your head when someone else criticises the cap.
It's no longer just a piece of cloth.
Speaking of cap selection, though, I mean, looking at the bench, there was no one there to really come on, and that must have buoyed Nottingham Forest to a certain extent.
Well, that was as was said in the studio earlier by our delightful cameraman Sam. It was a cocky move, and that's absolutely right. It was cocky. It showed, I think, a lack of respect to Forest, who were 14th in the Championship, and it's away. You know, that's a motivated team. It's very, very frustrating. One thing, I suppose, is that it's good for the Wenger out brigade, and it's, you know, there are now fewer games of his reign.
Yeah.
That's less time to be angry.
What happens to that brigade once he leaves? That's what I worry. What are they going to channel their focus on?
Get a hobby.
Yeah.
Don't know what it'll be, their wives.
But you
craft ale.
That would have been encouraging to Forrest, because I reckon Gary Brazil would have said to them, look at the team they've picked. You know? And you could see from the first minute the way that Forrest was snapping into those tackles and really badgering and hassling Arsenal. And Arsenal were a team who were a combination of inexperienced players who will learn from this, like Joe Willock and Reece Nelson and Rayne Adelaide and all the rest of it. Maitland-Niles. There's so many double-barreled players in that team. You know who I mean anyway. And players who, as Jim rightly said, are on the fringes but can't really seem to make a compelling argument by their performances of why they should be playing. I mean, Theo Walcott's career is... I mean, I don't want to get too harsh on the guy immediately after this event, which was only last night as we record now, but... I mean, what's he got to show for his career, Theo Walcott? I mean,
the FA Cup wins, 100 goals for Arsenal. You know, scored a hat trick for England, but you know, it could be, it should be more than that.
For his promise. Mm-hmm. I know he's had injury problems and stuff. I find him it's hard to make a comparison, but you know, like Tim Henman, where it's like a bit embarrassing about it. I find that with Theo Walcott, it's like a bit embarrassing about him playing football. Yeah. I don't want to be mean to the guy, because by all accounts he's a lovely chap, but. That's just not good enough. It's absolutely not good enough on any level. And Arsenal with a combination, like I say, of talented raw players and players who should be showing the manager why they want to be part of the team, they should be able to do the business against Nottingham Forest. Yeah. They really should.
And the problem within the game is also quite reflective of a larger problem at Arsenal, which is that players made the same mistakes over and over again in the game, which allowed Forest to just go, well, we'll just keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah, we don't have perfectly. To do plan B or yeah. anything.
Well, Ospina made about four or five yeah. really decent saves.
Yeah, yeah, but also, the second goal for Forest was fantastic, but Ospina there, you know, was he checking his phone?
So, I mean, to be honest, all of the focus is on Arsenal because it was a pretty abject performance from a decorated team who should be pushing for a Champions League place at the end of the season. But Nottingham Forest, take nothing away from them. Yeah. I do worry about Brereton's release clause. He's got to have something in there because, you know, people are going to be looking at that guy because he led the line so incredibly well.
And you have to understand from that point of view that Forest rested players as well. Yeah. I mean, Forest had a combination of experience and youth in there. But they just, and you don't want to get the old accusations out of being, well, you don't want to be accused of being like a proper football man and being like Tim Sherwood, but really, Forest really wanted to win that game. They really wanted it. You know, Arsenal maybe saw it as a bit of an inconvenience, saw it as like they couldn't really be sort of bothered to really match them man for man. And absolutely right about the comment on who was on the bench. They had no one to change it. Mm. You know, I know I don't want to feel like this, and Jim will be able to shed more light on this than I will, but you wonder whether Wenger just appeases players like Özil and Sanchez and goes, oh, you can have a night off.
You can have the night off. You've got a move in the offing, possibly in January. Yeah, keep you fit.
Maybe that's part of it, but I think that the danger is that Wenger trusts in his players so much, he assumes that they'll get through a tie like that rather than actually necessarily clearly doing the work necessary to make sure those players go out on the pitch and win it on the pitch rather than assuming reputation is enough for that. Very frustrating.
We'll probably pick our goal of the round a little bit later on in the show, but Eric Lehigh's goal.
Eric!
Oh,
your pal,
I mean,
Eric.
They give him a lot of room. And he didn't get his dog because apparently if he was going to score, if he scores a hat-trick this season, he gets a dog from his wife or girlfriend.
Apparently he asked for the penalty, didn't he?
He asked for the penalty, but they weren't going to give him
it. He was laughed out of town. What did you make of that Lehigh second goal, wasn't it? Was great.
Oh, it was a stunner. I mean, Arsenal gave him a lot of room, a lot of space, a lot of time, but still got to finish
the
it. And the kid, like, Espinosa went, oh, piss.
Oh, come on.
He just sort of stooped and went, oh, flipping heck.
Yeah. I was really confused. Jack Wilshere's not got an injury, has he?
No, but he's played a lot of games of late, so I would imagine it's just resting him for caution,
but
and
that's a legitimate...
probably over caution in terms of the lineup.
If I was Wilshere, I'd have really wanted to play. Maybe he did, and Wenger said no, but I mean, even if you just pop him on the bench and he can come on and really
steady it.
Mm. Yeah.
He's been the player doing that for Arsenal in recent weeks. He's been the player that's actually been dictating the tempo, and it's the Jack Wilshere of old in those last few games. But I don't want to sort of talk too quickly about that, but that's exactly the calm, steady head they needed in that match, and it wasn't there.
And psychologically, if you see kind of the Sanchez's, the Özil's on the bench, they don't have to play. I presume they started to be resident in the they weren't even on the bench, so presumably you still have to turn up or something. I that was always my understanding. If you're not on the bench, you're still turning up for the matches. It just seems weird that you. Where are these people? Where are these players?
No, if they're not in the squad, they don't have to
travel.
They don't have to travel away games. I think they'll be expected to be there at a home game. But Eric Lehigh is a good example for Arsenal players to take a look at. I mean, look how Eric Lehigh rose to that occasion. Mm. I've seen Eric Lehigh in the flesh on more than one occasion, and sometimes he's been terrible. Mm. You know, so clearly he rose to the occasion. He really wanted to be there. He dominated Maitland-Niles at times, and he really made himself busy, and that was typified by his two goals. If any of those Arsenal players showed anything like that sort of application, and they weren't all terrible or anything, it was not like, you know, Forest had a good night, and the third round of the FA Cup can bring about these occasions. And I think, as you said at the top of the show, Pete, it's the first time Arsenal have been knocked out in the third round for an awful long time. Mm. And it's probably one of the first times Wenger's been knocked out by lower league opposition as well. Yeah. Generally, their record is quite good.
Yeah.
But ultimately, the application just wasn't there. You can't swan your way through a game away from home under the floodlights against a team who really badly wants to win. And that should be a lesson to them. But you know it won't be, Jim. Do you know it won't be?
Well, I think probably some teams actually can do that. They are good enough to. But I think there's clearly disharmony in the Arsenal squad.
Arsenal have been good enough to swan through it, though.
If you don't have that harmony within your team, you can't rely on them getting you through an off day.
Mm.
And that's, you know, that's just led to them coming on
start. You have to come to the... You wouldn't be particularly happy to see Per Mertesacker start in Premier League games now after that, surely.
Not with any other available option, no.
I mean,
certainly not in a two. In a three, I can certainly see an argument for it against different opposition with a stronger team out. But, you know, clearly his lack of pace is becoming an issue as he gets older, as that decreases. He never had a lot of pace. He worked around it. But, you know, he's calling time at the right time.
I find it really curious. And the word that keeps coming to my mind is arrogance about the Arsenal team selection, because I understand there's a chance that Arsenal may not have known that Ben Brereton would have started. But the type of player he is, you put Mertesacker in there in a two, with Elneny, who's not had a brilliant Arsenal time, and Willock, who's very, very inexperienced in front of the back four, to protect him. And you've got Rob Holding, who isn't really up to much based on that show.
Rob Holding's had some very good performances, but as with many Arsenal players, you know, they go up and down with confidence.
But I do think you need... Holding, presumably, if he's next to Koscielny and one other, he looks a lot better than when he's next to a rickety old Per Mertesacker.
Absolutely.
Against a young, hungry forward who just really wants to run you over and over again. Mm. And they tried to isolate him against Mertesacker. You could see it a mile off. Mm. I just found that curious that they would leave Mertesacker so exposed against the real hustle and bustle of a championship team.
Well, I think it's probably showing of too much faith in Mertesacker's ability at the moment. I mean, if you look back to the FA Cup final, we all kind of worried about that beforehand, and he had a fantastic game.
So that was the first game he played that season, wasn't it?
I don't know about that season, but certainly in a long, long time.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just think it's a sad show of the decline.
Well, we are going to have to move on, but before we do, just one question. If Arsenal, get dumped out of the EFL Cup, if they, manage to put in a terrible performance against Chelsea on Wednesday, would you see Arsene Wenger leaving the club before the end of the season?
Arsene Wenger won't leave the club before the end of his contract.
Right.
I'd be amazed by that.
Okay.
What about the penalty, really quickly?
Oh, yes,
the
penalty. Yeah, obviously the standing foot penalty kick. Would VAR have sorted that out? I think it probably would have. I'm not a big fan of VAR.
Because of the ball, you mean?
Yeah, I think by the second replay, I was convinced that it was a standing foot.
Let's get this right, though, because VAR, that would be only a very, very small percentage of what VAR would be used for. Mm. And the reason VAR would sort that is because it's a black or white yes or no decision.
Mm-hmm.
The VAR conversation could have been really nicely summed up just in those two moments. The penalty that was at Debussy, it gave away.
Yeah.
He had an awful game, by the way. Debussy gave away. And then the standing foot double kick issue. So the double kick issue, I agree with you, Pete, is easily sorted out by VAR. Mm. But the penalty decision isn't.
Mm.
If you look at the penalty decision over and over again, it looks like he touches the ball, but he sort of comes through the man. And I can see either way for that. So there's no way VAR is going to help you because it's not compelling enough to be overturned. So it's actually going to be useless in that situation.
The stated aim of VAR, though, is only to improve 2% of decisions. And I think just because it isn't going to work on everything doesn't mean it will work on nothing. And therefore, I think it's a value. Personally.
But do you understand the point that
yeah.
black and white decisions are easily sorted out?
Absolutely. But I feel that that's something that needs to be sort of folded into that conversation, that it shouldn't be treated as this kind of perfect solution to everything. It's just it's an aid, isn't it?
I just think I've been a long-standing hater of VAR and the
haters don't hate
haters, but watching it actually in action, you sort of go, "Yeah, this is probably as bad as I thought it was going to be. It's too slow. There's just too much. There's too much time between decision and the actual incident itself." I'm not having it. I'm not having it.
On one level,
I love tech.
On one level, though, I agree that I personally I would be against it. Now, I'm not suggesting we have a massive sort of prolonged debate about it, but there's part of me that thinks that it is a little bit ridiculous that every single person in the world has this access to this technology, apart from the man who's expected to make the decision.
Yeah, quite.
I think it's the application of it. At the moment, you've got like this big kind of like 2 minute kind of buzz when a goal's been scored, and then I think you guys were talking on the continent a little while ago about how long it took in Serie A for it to be actually for a goal to actually be ratified as an actual goal. It's not right. Like, why isn't there just a dead man's kind of handle where there's just three referees watching it at the same time? they go, yes, 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 like bloody Britain's Got Talent, you know what I mean? And the referee instantly knows.
Exactly like
instantly
that.
Instantly knows.
But Pete, I think the general consensus is that it is the teething problems have been overcome sort of now and it is getting a lot better. So I think they expect that to be the same.
I think we can all agree that the way to test it is over one fixture on a round of games.
On a Monday night in the FA Cup. So let's move on to Coventry City 2, Stoke City 1. Mark Hughes out on his ear, but mercifully back in the running order.
Oh, he'd be pleased to hear
little
that.
Little silver lining for Marky boy there. Another dreadful performance from Stoke City. Once again, a Premier League team just not giving the respect that the FA Cup deserves.
Yeah, I just feel like this is a classic example of how if you're in the run of losing games, if you're in that habit of losing games, when you go behind, it almost doesn't matter who the opposition are because you're then suddenly, you know, your shoulders drop, your heads go. It's like, oh, God, we've got to climb this mountain again. And Coventry were fantastic.
They were great.
They should have had more in that game.
They were great.
They did get back into it, though, Stoke. They battled their way back in.
Of course. They ended the game with six forwards on the field playing at various positions. So it's not as if Marquis didn't throw the kitchen sink at it. He's just still out on his ear. that's football.
Stephen Ireland, the harbinger of doom, back in the team.
Back in the team.
Manager's gone. I found it, you know, it's a bit, he went out with a bit of a whimper, didn't he, Mark Hughes? And, you know, the idea that he chucks all these forwards on it. The writing's been on the wall for some time there. I mean, if you look at the team that they've got, or the best team they can put out, clearly a few of those players, their best years are behind them, and maybe he's fallen a bit between two stools with this task he was given to make them a bit more attractive. And he's been there a long time, don't forget.
And let's also give him the credit that he did achieve that.
Yeah.
You know, he had them finishing ninth three times in a row, and he had them playing good football, and, you know, they had a lot of good times under him. Sometimes it just goes stale, though.
And I think you've got to be an exceptionally good manager after 4.5 years to reinvent it again. And you know, almost like what Ferguson was known for, continually building brilliant teams. Now, obviously, if Ferguson was a genius, Mark Hughes isn't that. But he's been there long enough to sustain a Premier League role, and he has to deserve some credit for that. But the writing's been on the wall for some time with them. I think a new, fresh set of ideas would get an awful lot more out of that squad than Hughes was getting. And again, these lower league teams, maybe it's a little bit more sort of stark with Coventry, who were relegated last season in League Two, and there's a big gap there. Mm. But by and large, as we saw with the Forest game, I've watched a decent amount of league football this season, football league football. And these teams, they are hard-running, hard-working, talented players. And if you give them a sniff of blood, they'll take it.
Yeah,
And that's exactly what happened here. As soon as Stoke got back in the game, it was about 15 minutes later, Coventry scored again. And Coventry had a lot of chances. Jack Butler made some good saves.
Yeah, not against Grimmer, though.
That was a shame. That was a shame.
But to be fair, though, Jack Grimmer hits that so early. No one's expecting that.
I didn't expect it to go in. But that was almost a little bit reminiscent of the Ospina thing. You said Ospina was at fault for one of the goals against Forest, and Butler was at fault for one of the goals against Coventry. But Butler still kept him in the game. Yeah. I mean, if everyone else is playing like an absolute drain, the goalkeeper's allowed to have one mistake. Yeah. You know, unfortunately, it just really cost Stoke. But Mark Mainolti kept getting it over and over again, and you wonder why players like at Stoke, who at the back, who should be better. I mean, I've said this before on the show, Butland, Wimmer, who's really highly rated and obviously talented, although he's not done very well at Stoke, Kurt Zouma, who's played at a high level, Ryan Shawcross, who I know didn't play but is a very experienced player. I mean, you cannot make an argument against the idea that a new manager with a fresh set of ideas wouldn't get more out of those defenders. He absolutely would.
Well, look at the way that they played against Newcastle. Zouma, like, wiped out. I can't remember which forward it was of Newcastle. We've only got two. But it was a Stonewall penalty. We didn't get it. But it was just like, that's Zouma. You know what I mean? Like, that's a big ticket acquisition. Was that Mark Hughes' problem, though? He relied too much on Wimmer, Mbula side, or these big players with big price tags.
Yeah.
And they just didn't perform for him.
I think he seems to have a really unlucky track record with that. And perhaps, I guess, you put that down to his own, motivational skills, because I mean, even if you go back to sort of like Bojan and Afellay and Shaqiri, when those players came in, and there was that stat about Stoke having the most Champions League winners in the league, like so few of those players have really consistently performed for him, and it's a bit of an anomaly. That it's a strange one.
But do you think with Berahino, for example, just to take one of those players out of that list, Pete, I mean, he's not scored a single goal for Stoke, has he?
Don't think so.
And you have to view that in the context of the problems that Tony Pulis had with him at West Brom, right? He was in all sorts of trouble all the time. Pulis was always being fielding questions about his attitude, about his fitness and all this other stuff. And I think, I don't know if Mark Hughes has been guilty of this, but if Mark Hughes has signed Berahino for a good amount of money and thought, right, he's got a track record of scoring a decent amount of Premier League goals, which he has, but he's automatically going to do that for me, I think that's dangerous. I mean, Berahino has got one 20-goal season in all competitions and has had question marks over his attitude. I don't know the guy personally, but for him to automatically assume that Berahino is going to score goals for him, it's a mistake, and it was proven to be a mistake.
But managers have done that before. They've taken kind of, let's say, in inverted commas, troubled players and went, I'm going to get the best out of them, and it almost never works.
Well, I don't know. Some managers are particularly good at that, but Hughes has shown over and over again that perhaps he's not. So clearly some aspect of their transfer strategy broke down quite some time ago, and they've not arrested it.
Mark Hughes has been in management for a good amount of time and is a good enough manager to sustain a decent amount of top level jobs. I mean, he's managed in the Premier League for a good while. He's managed at international level, but you know, he's absolutely got shortcomings in his management style. I don't think anyone who's ever played for him or worked with him would disagree with that, and unfortunately it seems like he's got a shelf life when it comes to managing teams.
But once again, I mean, we are focusing on the Stoke City kind of Premier League side of things. Coventry City, could this be some kind of turning point for that club who've just been badly treated for such a long time?
Yes, I think it's a great moment for them to beat Premier League opposition, and they should absolutely enjoy it, and they are well worth the win. They're doing all right in League Two at the moment. They've got a good chance of promotion again, which again would be salve to the wound of the way they've been treated over the last 10 years or so, or even longer. I can't remember the actual date.
At least they're still playing in Coventry. That's the main thing. They're not in Northampton.
Exactly, that's right. And is it 46 years since Coventry finished in the top six of a division?
So
that looks like it will be broken this season.
But, fantastic.
Yeah, fingers crossed it will, and they've richly deserved it, and they should enjoy it. I mean, this is not Coventry fans' fault because of the way the club has been treated and the way that...
Sorry, Richard Keyes is a Coventry fan, so can we maybe...
I know, but I think...
Don't blame them.
I imagine Richard Keyes is probably on the side of the hedge fund owners. although I can't substantiate that, but I would just say that because they've been treated so badly, it was a shame not to see more fans at the game. But we absolutely understand why that is, and fingers crossed they can use it as a platform to really kick on this season.
Bring back Peter Undlove, that's what I say.
That's always the answer.
That's the answer to every question, I think. Right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back after this with a bit of correspondence and a bit of Merseyside Derby too.
I better go to the cash point and get some money, if I've got any money left.
Oh, Arsenal fan TV was fantastic after the game.
Unequivocal.
Bet it was.
So Arsene Wenger out.
So many swear words per minute.
Per Mertesacker. yes, you are listening to the Football Ramble. Welcome back. It's time for emails with Mr. Jim Campbell.
Yeah, it is. We've got an email from Charlie Hart.
Hello, Charlie Hart.
Solid name, innit?
Yeah.
Sounds like
your
mate. West Ham fan.
I don't know.
I've got Charlie Hart coming to pub with a bag of fish.
Charlie Hart.
Charlie Hart.
What's Artie doing? Is he coming down?
he's a character.
Charlie. I'll open him up.
He's from Harrow.
He's from Harrow. Harrow.
Yeah. So Harrow. Just to clarify, Charlie, we're not going to stab you.
No.
Don't worry about that. So
we might.
Charlie, appropriately enough, says, Watcher, fellas.
Watcher.
My highlight of the weekend was the magnificent big Baz Dost only touching the ball 13 times in the whole game while playing for Sporting Lisbon on Sunday evening and still bagging a hat-trick. Baz, what football do to you?
It's Baz Dost football do to
you. Yeah, do. Yeah. Commit to it,
get
guys.
It right, Charlie Hart. On a side note, Fulham legend Brian Ruiz is currently playing for Sporting. God, I love that guy. So did Marcus. So did all of us.
Big fan
of that guy.
Did he help dump us out of the World Cup?
Yes.
It was a nil-nil, wasn't it? It was a nil-nil. So
he contributed in a sense to our own
failure. Didn't help us get any further.
Cheers, Charlie. We talked a bit about Baz Dost on the continent a few months ago. Mm. Maybe I'll bring it up again on Wednesday. Mm. Listen out for that.
Baz Dost football do to you.
Baz Dost football do to you.
Hi, guys. I assume there will be lots of nominations for Diego Costa getting sent off for Atletico Madrid, and rightly so. It was hilarious. However, my highlight of the week goes to his much kinder compatriot, Alvaro Morata, for giving his shirt to a young Norwich fan who offered him a Haribo sweet when he was warming up. That's from Lewis Matthews, and that's heartwarming.
That's
as
very
well,
nice. I mean,
that could have been laced with anything.
I didn't see that, but
just
I did see...
You're getting a Berahino situation, do you?
Exactly. I didn't see the game... And I imagine Alvaro Morata was looking for any excuse not to have to play.
Because I've been poisoned!
Norwich are quite good.
Yeah, that's a good idea as well, Pete. What? Fans doing that in the future. Just like filling Haribo with banned substances and tricking opposing players into eating them.
Let's not poison our footballers.
No, it was your idea.
You just said it was a good idea.
You said it was a good idea.
But it wasn't my idea, was
it? I have many ideas. Right. Some are good, some are bad. Do not endorse them.
You've suggested the idea. You've seconded it. I'm going to have to veto it. Don't do it.
All right, fine.
You've been outvoted.
I think we're covered. Yeah. Okay, so Ender Keenan's been in touch, boys.
So,
Ender Keenan. Says, hi guys, referring to your chat on Friday about commissioning a statue of someone and leaving it in a random place, there is no better candidate than Mike Dean.
Okay.
Already a controversial figure, and especially so after the penalty decision for Arsenal against West Bromwich. It should be he should be immortalised, arms aloft and in mid-celebration like he was against like he was in that Spurs game. Other suggestions would be the no-look yellow card. I think this statue would give endless joy to people, mainly because of the follow-up stories of how it was vandalised. Yeah. All the best, Ender Keenan.
That's the problem of it. You can't have a statue to a ref, can you?
I forgot about the no-look.
People will be going out of their way.
Do you reckon not even like Kalina in his hometown had a statue?
He might do.
Maybe.
Possibly.
Hasn't Kalina undone all his like great reputation as a ref by doing like loads of really bad, like money grabbing roles in different sort of despotic regimes and stuff?
Was he? I don't
think
know.
He might have done. Oh, okay. But you know, that's just reminding me, Jim. It's worth pointing out on today's show that the amount of Premier League teams that were really underwhelming in the FA Cup this weekend was crazy.
Yeah.
We talked about Arsenal, talked about Stoke. Swansea got a nil in the draw against Wolves, who I understand are a good team. Chelsea couldn't beat Norwich. Yeah. West Ham couldn't beat Shrewsbury. I mean, Spurs went through. Man City had a bit of a scare against Premier League opposition.
Newcastle did it though.
Newcastle
is the mighty Luton. Yes.
Yeah, they did. But it's just interesting how that's happened.
Still a weird one.
Yeah.
Weird one.
Leggy. Everyone's tired.
Everyone's very leggy.
Although, I mean, the Championship teams, well, and all of the teams further down, they play this amount of games anyway, don't they?
Yeah, but Jim, it is almost like a really particularly sort of cruel punishment where you go, right, these top-level athletes. So if you're playing in Germany or Spain or Italy or whatever, you have a break. But you're in the Premier League now, and you're going to play like 100 games in 10 days. And then when you think it's just about done, we're going to put you up against a team away from home
who really fancy it.
Who really want it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like literally the biggest match they'll ever play.
Yeah.
They're not as good as you, so in some cases they will literally kick your teeth out.
Yeah. Do you want it or not?
Do you want your teeth or not?
Yeah.
We'll put it in some milk.
Yeah.
We're good. Okay, right. Well, let's move on to Liverpool Everton, the Merseyside derby. Liverpool 2, Everton 1. Sigurdsson with Everton goal, Milner and Van Dijk with the winner.
Pete,
unbelievable scenes.
The Sammy Lee derby.
Sammy Lee's face when the winner went in. Oh, he looked like a little hamster man.
Every day he's shuffling.
Yeah. he was screaming, wasn't he? It was just...
The scene was set for Virgil van Dijk to score a winner.
Let's look at the actual sort of details of that. It's his debut. It's against Everton in a competition he can knock them out of when it's 1-1. It's in the cop end and he gets the winner.
Yeah,
I mean, that is dream stuff.
And he's fucking massive, to be fair. I forgot how big... Because I don't watch a lot of Southampton, but I was like... My God, he's massive.
Yeah.
He's a mountain.
I was hoping that the commentator was going to go, and he's paid his transfer fee off already.
Yeah.
He hasn't. He absolutely hasn't.
It's about 5 million off, surely.
Yeah.
I think you only get 5 million for winning the entire FA Cup.
I wonder, actually, at the end of a player's contract, whether that it's worked out, you get like an appraisal of whether you were value for money or not. I should do that.
Well, I mean, to be honest, I mean, Klopp's typical kind of very aggressive kind of forward player. It's like, yeah, I've spent all this money on a defender, but he will be a striker. He will score goals. Yeah.
I guarantee you 18 goals a season.
Yeah.
It was a great game. It was a fantastic game to watch. And it was
a great start to the weekend, wasn't it?
It was a brilliant way to start the weekend. I really, really enjoyed it. It was superb. I was a bit disappointed that Rooney went off early because I thought he'd be good for a red card or a goal.
He was definitely in the frame for that. He should have been... He should have been off.
Is it fair to say, would Charlie Hart, who emailed earlier, suggest that Rooney was putting it about?
He was putting it about.
I reckon he would.
There's one where he raked his studs down somebody's leg, and I was like, How is that not a yellow?
But Wayne Rooney's got to that stage in his career now where he can legitimately go up to the ref and go, come on, I always do that.
Yeah.
Can't tell me I can't do that now.
We do that for 15 years, mate.
He's deciding to do it at this point.
Exactly.
Very much like, I fancy a yellow. This is worth a yellow.
Did you enjoy the game, Jimbo?
I certainly did. I think my highlight of it, actually, despite all the sort of lovely romance of the Van Dijk story, was Everton's goal. It was a beautiful piece of work on a break, and it's very, very, very brilliantly slotted home by Sigurdsson. Like, they need more of that from him, and we are starting to see Sigurdsson come out now.
It was a really calm play, wasn't it? It was a really calm finish.
Yeah. It was, like,
yeah. Let's put it in there.
He could have blasted that.
Yeah.
Was the most romantic part of the Van Dijk goal that... this is a man who has literally down tools at his existing club to force a move for £75 million.
The romance of the FA Cup.
Yeah, okay, sorry.
That was the narrative.
What did you guys make of the Holgate and Firmino thing? Pete, you and I were trying to lip read it, weren't we?
Yeah, I mean, we made out a couple of choice words that you saw on the TV show Narcos a couple of times. I've always been watching Narcos, well, or he's South American. But
I thought to a certain extent, I think the referee panicked slightly once Holgate made an accusation.
I agree.
Nobody wants to send off a player who's just been racially abused, but he didn't do anything really. He can put whatever he wants in the report. It was a difficult situation for the ref, but whatever was said, the referee should have heard because yeah. he was right next to it. The one camera angle that you get where you see all of Firmino's mouth, it gets covered at one point, and then that's the point where Holgate gets really angry. So it's like,
I saw Holgate. I lip read Holgate saying, ref, he's just called me.
Right, okay.
And you could see him saying that fairly clear. Yeah. I rewound it, and you can see it fairly clear. So he has. He's accused him of it.
Yeah. But I just thought that, oh wow, so what happens from here? What happens if the referee says, well, I didn't hear that, nobody else heard that? He just puts it in his report. But then Holgate has effectively not been sent off for throwing a player in the crowd, or not even got a yellow card for throwing the player in the crowd. So it's a difficult situation for the referee. I think it's a difficult situation for football, I think. Whatever happens sets a precedent, I think.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. If the referee hasn't heard that, then he can't do anything.
All they've got to do is treat the accusation seriously and gather as much evidence as they can.
Yeah. But there should be more camera angles than the ones that are shown on television.
Yeah, I would imagine the reason that we're not seeing the incident is very much a political one.
I thought Bobby Madley could have dealt with it better by essentially getting right in between them, sending Holgate off, which he should have done, and that probably would have sort of negated any further stuff happening, because if Madley was right on the scene. And that's easier said than done. They've got a tough job, referees.
It happened very quickly.
Yeah, but he's seen that clear as day. Mm. If you push a player like with that sort of force into the crowd, I mean, that's definitely reckless behaviour.
He should have been sent off for it.
So that probably would have nipped it in the bud a bit earlier.
Yeah.
And it might have been different. But we'll wait to see what comes out. But it was definitely a flashpoint. I hope what's been accused didn't actually happen, because it was a fantastic game. And really, we don't really want to be talking about that off the back of it.
No. I mean, yeah. Mm.
There we go.
That's football sorted. Mm. We'll probably move on to some of the shocks that happened in the FA Cup. Obviously, we've had Nottingham Forest. Was that a shock? Does that count as a shock, Jim? I don't think it does, to be honest.
Depends how closely you watch Arsenal.
Yeah, I've got a shock. Ayoze Perez scoring 2 goals in one game.
Don't be rude, thank you.
That's a shock.
Shelby's goal was nice.
Rob Lee's two sons playing for Luton.
One of them at the bar at one point, I think.
You see them on Football Focus.
Lovely lads.
Yeah, they really do seem great. Yeah.
Lovely lads. Nice.
I'd like to get one of them in here to replace Marcus.
Let's get one of Marcus' sons.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think of Middlesbrough beating Sunderland, Pete? Was that a shock to your northeastern ears and eyes?
Not really. I didn't realise that Borough Fan TV exists. Okay. There's some guy on the internet filming people outside the cell net. What used to be called the cell net.
What an embarrassment.
Yeah.
Who'd want that associated?
Yeah, I know, right?
Jim, Pete still calls the Middlesbrough Stadium the cell net.
Yeah.
That's embarrassing, mate. Granddad.
When did Cellnet stop being a thing? I'm not having it.
So where do you stand on the Middlesbrough v Sunderland debate? You're on the side of the Borough, are you?
It was just a very easy match for Borough, wasn't it? I mean, it's just Sunderland just kind of...
Remove the fence, though.
They just did not.
If you had to choose Middlesbrough or Sunderland having, like, unbridled success, which would you choose?
Well, I know more Borough fans than I know Sunderland fans, but everyone's pretty nice up there. So,
shut up.
Up all yours. God.
You're going back up soon.
I'm the host.
Let's get
here,
back.
I have to be impartial,
let's
all right?
You
ain't got the usual Pete Donaldson, the usual dickhead.
Impartial.
I've got to hold this together somehow.
Impartial, like when you called Sunderland fans pit yakkers.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah. I mean, they're not technically pit yakkers. What are you going to do? What? They're literally Mackhams. Newport County 2, Leeds United 1. An excellent header to settle that tie. What a piece of work that was.
Yeah, bullet header from the Exiles. What a name.
Great name. It's a great nickname.
Fantastic.
And he was proper climbing as well, but I did take nothing away from that bullet.
Just beautiful.
Did you see that police officer not taking his role seriously?
No, I think he was taking the role seriously, but I think he forgot. Basically, there was a policeman in the crowd, I think marshalling the Leeds fans, and he was clearly a Leeds fan himself, and he, even though it was at Newport, he was... starting the chants off with the Leeds fans. But it was a sweary chant, so every time they said the word bastard, he covered his mouth.
I think policemen can swear, can't they?
Definitely not.
Do you think he just sort of, I'll come along, I'll bring my uniform.
Yeah. I'll take my role very seriously, but it will be my interpretation of a role.
Yeah. It's down to the policeman's discretion. But all you want to see is consistency.
Yeah, but Leeds looked a little bit jaded. They looked a little bit knackered, to be honest. A lot of football being played over
Thomas Christensen took it on the chin, didn't he? Which was nice to see.
That's amazing.
I mean, not literally, but you know what I mean.
What a ground as well.
Yeah.
So that's one of the highlights of this weekend, isn't it? Just seeing the length and breadth of the stadium. yeah, the country has to offer.
Did you see how much, or did you hear how much Jonathan Pearce patronised Fleetwood Town against Leicester?
Oh, God,
it's
yeah.
Like, Fleetwood Town are a League One club. It's not, you know, they're third tier.
I think he sort of forgets that it's not 1985. But who's ever heard of Fleetwood Town, yeah. guys?
But this is the thing with you know, the BBC picking their games, their customary game where it's, you know, a team from a lower league against a Premier League team, where they have to constantly reinforce that decision, yeah. don't they? They're constantly justifying the fact that they've chosen this game, because clearly they were hoping for Vardy to play.
Yeah, that's true,
and
yeah.
It just didn't happen.
So there was a narrative black hole where there should have been a narrative, a Jamie Vardy shaped narrative, and they kept showing him in the crowd, didn't they? Which wasn't anywhere near as good, but
no.
but you know, maybe
I
Jonathan
hear that if you're not in the team, you still got this game.
Yeah, that's right. But it's like Jonathan Pearce had just decided that because Fleetwood Town were like in the eighth tier 12 years ago or something, it was still like a massive thing. But
he still thinks he you know, commentating on Sergeant Bash, and Sergeant Bash has left the is the VAR was it the VARs on? No,
no,
Sergeant Bash isn't a bad name.
It's
for
the corner patrol zone, the CPZ.
CPZ, yeah. Sorry, right, okay, yeah. The DMZ.
I love that Robert Wars gets a mention on every single show we do.
When great. Jonathan Pearce comes up,
yeah, which is all the time.
It's either football, it's either Robert Wars, or it's Sensible World of Soccer 1996, but which is what he commentated on the PC.
I don't know why Jonathan Pearce gets so confused about goal line technology when he's really able to quite adroitly explain the rules of, like,
Robot Wars.
Yeah. the pit being activated in Robot Wars.
Yeah.
And it's not like they across it.
It's not like they don't have replays in Robot Wars. It's
no,
a big,
no,
big part
exactly.
of it.
And I love the idea of, like, the producer of like Match of the Day saying to him, look, you know what you do with your technical stuff on Robot Wars? Just apply that
just
to this.
That.
Yeah.
Imagine they're just a lot
of. Do you reckon
robots?
they should put the ref bar? Remember they used to have a ref bar?
Yeah.
Put him on the crossbar.
Yeah,
say the ref, Jonathan, the ref bot's decided that it's not a goal. Yeah. All right, good, okay, yeah. fine.
Or not even put it on there, just tell him that's what's going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, it's the ref bot.
Give him a little Alexa. Was that offside, Alexa? Yes, it was.
But Pete, it's very important that if he has an Alexa, it's in the shape of the ref bot.
Okay,
yes.
Right.
Because that's what Jonathan needs.
All right. Well,
you haven't even put Fleetwood Town on your upset.
I know. Well, it's there.
That's how highly you rate them.
I will not be compared to Jonathan Pearce. I'm thinner, for one. Shrewsbury Town versus West Ham United stank up the telly, but we did have a situation where, just like the Vardy at Fleetwood, we had a player who was returning to his hometown club.
Charlie Hart loved it. It was loads of claret. So much fucking claret.
Oh, my word. It was a turgid match, but yeah, there was a lot of blood. Enough to keep us all very, very interested.
At one point, Josh Cullen, who I don't know how old he is, but he's pretty young, was standing on the touchline in his pants, blood pouring out of his mouth, one tooth short of a full set,
yeah.
while a physio ran around trying to find a glass of milk to preserve his tooth. And I thought, this is football.
Absolutely. I mean,
this is what we want.
The next match is less a replay than a rematch.
Yeah.
To be honest, I mean, I'm thinking at a football match, the only place you get milk is those little sachets.
UHT,
you get.
Mate. No use to you, I don't
so
think,
you
either.
You reckon?
I don't think it'd be as good.
I just assume that's right.
Yeah.
But it's perfectly tooth-sized. You can put the top
actually,
back on.
In a sense, it's fairly economical.
Yeah. Or just jam the tooth into it, and it serves as like a barrier.
So all I'm saying on that, though, is if your tooth, because if you watch the replay again, which I did, the tooth gets knocked out root and all, which means it has to, if they preserve it in milk, it can be reapplied. Mm. If it's a mechanical break and it just breaks out without the root, you can't replace it anyway.
No.
So he's all right on that. But I think that if someone's going to put my tooth in something to preserve it, I would want fresh milk rather than the UHT milk.
Okay.
Get up to the director's box, mate. There'll be fresh milk up there.
I'd accidentally put it in Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
It's gone.
Damn it.
Where's it gone?
It's
lucky it wasn't at Forest Green Rovers.
Yeah.
Just be like almond milk or
something. I know, right?
I chipped my tooth in football and it's started to turn a funny colour. That's a bit of a worry, isn't it?
But Pete,
if there are any dentists listening, can you help me?
Imagine we put it in a glass of Coke and then they went back an hour later and went, look, I swear I put it in there. Someone's had it away. Someone's nicked it.
I definitely heard it. Who's stolen that tooth?
Look how clean this penny is.
Is West Ham not turning up with a hat for the captain, Joe Hart, to use a good barometer for their season so far? Unprepared.
I don't
really understand the opposition.
I think if you're the captain of the club, you should take responsibility for your own cap.
Your own cap.
And
right,
as we well know, as long-term listeners of this show will know well, as I told you guys in the seminal work by Neville Southall, In Search of Perfection, which is part goalkeeper manual, part autobiography, Big Nev recommends the use of a visor.
A visor?
To prevent overheating.
Yeah, oh, I just feel that Joe Hart has slipped in the standards he usually provides for his head and shoulders.
should maybe be thinking
more about that.
The amount of loss of form Joe's had recently, you'd half think he'd quite like to stay at Shrewd. I'll just stay here. Yeah. I had a great time here. I can't stay back here.
I did look at the logo on that cap and I thought, is that? I'm not really sure what that logo. I could only see it from quite far.
What was
like,
the logo?
What if the logo's a bit dodgy? What if it's like an alt right movement or something? It's like, yeah. Oh, that's a good look, isn't it? Yeah, You're losing all of your sponsorships,
especially with those St George flags that are up around with Joe Hart on them.
Mm. What was that? Oh yeah, of course. Yeah.
I would love to have seen Joe Hart put that cap on, but backwards. Yeah. It's like a massive ballsy move.
Yeah.
He did make a good.
The sun's no match for me.
He did make a couple of saves in the sunshine at that side of the pitch. But yeah, it was a very very bloody affair. Matt Sadler's head just refusing to stop bleeding. That was just a constant problem.
Doesn't matter how much mayonnaise you put on that.
I like being playing pie face. Yeah. It was like peak. Speaking of Neville Southall, he used to put a lot of Vaseline on his head, didn't he?
And Jim Leighton was famous for it.
A lot of Vaseline on the forehead. Cullen obviously lost a tooth as well. It was a comprehensive head kick as well. It was like a proper smack in the mouth.
Yeah, you're not walking away from that one. No brushing. That's an assault in the street.
I had a decent battle with Pete over WhatsApp on the weekend saying, I don't want to do best head kicks on the show today.
Well, I do want to do best head kicks. Pete's just insisting
that we're doing it.
I just think we should do it because, you know, they're not always really dangerous. Sometimes they're just like, ow, and then you just get on with the match.
But Jim, car crashes aren't always really dangerous.
My favourite was David
Batty. Just happening, isn't it?
Yeah. David Batty overhead kick on Ben Yunus for Tunisia in World Cup 98.
What about Abu Dhabi on John Terry? That's
the worst because he goes in for a diving header and his head snaps back. It's horrible.
That's a classic of the genre, though.
Oh, absolutely.
But you put a picture on the WhatsApp group a little while ago and it was, Baptiste?
Yeah, Julio Baptiste is in the background and he appears to be kicking something, but he's nowhere near the ball.
He's just the ball, you'd be going, it's at his feet. It's not. He's just like playing a completely different game.
Yeah, but his face is really calm and demure as well. It's like he's going, why, hello, I did not see you there.
Jim, Baptista is swinging his leg about 50 yards away from the ball and having a lovely time.
Yeah,
having a great time.
He's such a broad man.
That's why he was able. Did he score four goals in one game?
Five goals in one game.
That's how he's able to do it. Yeah. He's like a Sabutio player.
Yeah.
No, what, not Sabutio, that kid's game where you press the top of their head and they kick.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Baptista, law of averages states, if you're always kicking, sooner or later the ball's going to come to you and you're going to score. That's how he was able to score five.
And that was maybe the greatest statistical anomaly in the history of that plan.
Yeah.
I liked him. He was very broad.
Can I talk of a former West Ham manager, Alan Pardew?
Right.
Him and West Brom got a win, of course, against Exeter. And I was annoyed at how they sort of weren't celebrating the goals. It was really arrogant because it was almost like, you haven't won a game since August. Don't act like it's business as usual.
I don't know if that's fair. Jay Rodriguez looked very, I would say, relieved to have scored. He looked quite pumped.
So you reckon it was just relief? Maybe it was like this is a familiar feeling, but I can't quite grasp it. And that said, how Robson Carney did miss a penalty, which was terrible, so it was business as usual somewhere.
Every time I hear that man's name now, it reminds me of the Manic Street Preachers Wales Euro song, where it's just like, Robson Carney, every time I think
about
it.
Oh, yeah, that was bad.
It
I remember.
Was dreadful.
It was terrible, yeah.
Absolutely dreadful. There were some fantastic goals scored this weekend. Favourite ones this weekend? I really enjoyed Aguero's. Lingard's was good as well, but I'll probably edit this bit out because we don't talk about Lingard. First rule of Ramble Club.
One of the sort of unwritten rules of football reporting and media is that you don't tend to talk about a goal if the team are on the end of a shellacking. and Ashley Barnes' goal was a nice one.
Yeah.
But they were beaten 4-1, so we probably wouldn't mention it too much.
Yeah, I also think Jan Vertonghen's goal, a defender smacking the ball that well, is always to be appreciated.
And Jim, Per Mertesacker's goal was a nice one.
Excellent. Actually, Danny Welbeck's goal was pretty good among that malaise. He did very well.
It was really sharp, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Quick, yeah.
I just like the way it sort of rolled into the net. It's like, oh, that's agonising for the goalkeeper. Terrible hands. Right, speaking of terrible hands and terrible people, we'll be talking about, Conte versus Mourinho after this.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found.
LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
I've never felt this bad ever.
He was on form over the weekend, wasn't he?
Yeah. Mark Hughes can't win. The only way he can win is if he wins.
Fantastic.
It's nice stuff.
Hard
nice,
to argue
just,
with.
Just lovely stuff.
It's the sort of thing you find when you search Socrates on brainyquote.com.
That's where you find all your quotes from. Brainyquote.com.
No, I don't look at them. I enter your ones in there.
It sounds like something a Russian bot would say on Twitter.
Definitely. Yeah. So the preview show sponsored by Bet365. A sentence I couldn't say on the show last week is back this coming Friday. How did our best better get on, Luke?
We drew yet another blank.
Oh, no.
As Watford dispatched Bristol City in decent style. So, right. I hate to be the one to say this to listeners out there. You need to step up.
You need to
start coming forward and stop being the type of listener that tweets when we get one wrong or when a fellow listener gets one wrong. Start thinking, is there anything I could do better here? As Graham Souness once famously said, the best players in the world will go back and look in the mirror and go, what could I have done better today? Take a leaf out of that book. Ask not what the ramble can do for you, ask what you could indeed do for the ramble.
I like that.
And charity.
I'm going to put that in a brainyquote.com. Yeah. this has been bubbling under for a little while now. As early as July, Jose Mourinho and Conte started going at it, didn't they? It's been a weird sort of situation. Jose was using phrases like, I'm not going to lose my hair in relation to Conte, yeah, which I thought was a nice kind of clouded diss. Conte used the Italian phrase this week, demenza senile, in relation to the Manchester United manager. Mourinho mentioned Conte's suspension for a suspected match fixing. Does anyone come out of this pathetic little kind of pitched battle with any kind of credibility at all?
They don't, but I think more so than Conte, it's Mourinho, because he's the one doing this. I mean, the match
and he's
fixing
the one
thing,
more under pressure.
The match fixing thing for Conte was a huge thing where his family were harassed for about 3 years. You know, it was a terrible, terrible thing for him. And I think, you know, Mourinho's probably had this in his back pocket for a while, waiting to drop this because he knows it's going to make Conte blow his top. And
Conte did serve a ban for failing to report stuff. I mean, he did serve a ban.
He was cleared though, wasn't he?
No, it was reduced on appeal, ban, but he did serve a ban. I view it slightly differently to you guys. I think you have to go back to last season. So last season, do you remember Mourinho said to Conte, stop celebrating?
Stamford Bridge.
But even before that, I think in the lead up to that game at Stamford Bridge between the two teams, Conte branded Mourinho an enemy of Chelsea in the press conference, which really pissed Mourinho off. So that's when that Mourinho thing came about. The only difference I can see to my mind between what's happening now and what's happening then is that because Conte and Chelsea were on their way to winning the league, I just don't think Conte rose to it.
Yeah.
Now Conte's had this problem last summer with the club and not getting the players he wants, and he's been moaning ever since, and they're probably not going to win anything substantial this season. It's all of a sudden he's thought, oh, I might as well have a go. Yeah. I might as well have a go back now.
I don't know if
I've decided I'm not above it anymore.
I don't know if he ever was above it, because he rose to it, but he rose to it exactly by showing that he was above it. He would bat it away and just go, ah, whatever, doesn't matter.
But if you are playing against a rival team and the manager of that team is a legend at the club you're now managing at, and you spend the opening press conference calling him an enemy of the club,
yeah,
you know what you're getting yourself into. So I think
Jose will rise to it.
I think the immediate thing to do is to jump in and go, oh, it's Mourinho again. But actually, Conte knows what he's doing. Yeah. He knows what he's doing.
It is unedifying, but
I love
they're
it.
Both very good at it. And it's actually nice to have someone in the Premier League that will give a bit back to Jose and actually get under his skin.
Yeah.
That isn't Pep Guardiola.
I've enjoyed it.
It's funny with the way Mourinho does this, because it's, you know, he peppers his digs at strange times. I would imagine at some point in the press conference after this game, or after the next time they meet, he'll just have a dig at Jurgen Klopp, like seemingly for no reason at all.
What would Charlie Hart say?
It's just a sort of cockney noise.
Yeah, right, couple of sighs.
So it's just all a bit of a palaver, isn't it?
And bags. But what I would say is that, I mean, Conte must be annoyed at Jose Mourinho, because Jose Mourinho spent so much money at Chelsea. Now Conte gets the job and he's basically, you know, in an austerity kind of situation where he's just got to look after the pennies.
Well, that's his task at hand.
I mean,
though,
that is his task, but I mean,
you're talking about that. Also, a good example of that would be the Barkley bargain. Everton fans fuming. Absolutely fuming.
Well, you know, he let his contract run down, so you're going to get him for cheap, aren't you?
You know, they say about barristers in courts, they should never ask a question they don't already know the answer to. I tweeted about asking what Everton fans thought about Barkley moving. I knew what the answer was going to be. Hey, stiffed us out of 20 mil.
Yeah.
Hey. Stiffed us out of 20 mil.
Hey, they've spent double on that on Cenk Tosun. He's coming in. Is he going to be the guy who's going to score a couple of goals for them? Because they do need it.
Stop asking us this, because we're going to look like absolute dicks.
Mugs.
Yeah.
I'll say yes. You can say no if you want.
Turkish players are always better season. When they're a little bit older. And this guy's a little bit older. I think
where's
he's going
to
do
come
really
from?
Well.
You're thinking the two guy again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Shall we move on to the highlights of the weekend? Then we'll do a bit of goal for goal. Then let's get out of here, to be quite frank. Because to be honest, we've outstayed our welcome.
Oh, before we go into the highlights of the week, I need to give a shout out to Alan Gray, who I saw and promised to give a shout out on the show, and I've forgotten consistently every week for about a year.
Right.
So here you go, pal. There's a shout out to you, Alan.
Hello, Alan Gray.
There you go.
Do you want some highlights of the week?
Yeah.
The first highlight of the week is from Greg Sleet.
Is it from Alan Gray? That's
right. Great name, Greg Sleet.
Greg Sleet. Yeah. If you are a listener whose surname is a weather type, get in touch.
Nobody talks about Sleet anymore.
Because
I'm putting that out there. It's lesser seen. Yeah. What? The weather's getting less sleety. From Jim.
I'm not saying it's getting less sleety. You just rarely see sleet.
Can we get Sam, the social media guy, to go on Pete's hot take of the week? why doesn't anyone talk about sleet anymore? all right, Ramesh Ranganathan.
So do you want to hear what Greg Sleet's got to say?
No.
All right.
Yeah, of course. Go ahead.
Greg Sleet says, Robbie Savage defending Mark Hughes on 606, only to be interrupted with the news he'd been sacked.
Oh, that's nice.
Big build-up for Sleety there, but he's delivered.
Oh, bugger.
So Robbie's not able to make any point on any of his outlets about Mark Hughes without saying, look, I know he's my mate. I know he's my mate. At the start of everything.
What was he? He was doing Forrest, wasn't he?
Oh, he's confused.
Forrest are never on telly. His thing about the penalty, clearly kicked it twice. He just got, no, he only kicked it once for me.
To be fair, he's been a good pal to Hughes there, isn't he?
So
we'll give him that at least, if we're going to give him anything. Joey Burwood has chimed in, saying, England's number one keeper with over 400 career appearances for getting his baseball cap and borrowing one off a fan. With 75 caps for his country, you'd think he'd have a couple spare. And I think Joey raises a good point there. I think if you've been capped by your country, you should have to keep it with you. They should be the caps that you wear.
I've actually got a bit of insight into the Joe Hart thing that I forgot earlier. You know when Brett the Hitman Hart used to go down and give his sunglasses to a fan?
Yeah.
Right? Joe Hart always takes a baseball cap from a fan. It's like his thing. That's basically why it happened.
Give me a cap.
Yeah.
So Tom Wiles has been in touch. I love this. His highlight of the week is finding out that Sparky was so bad, Stoke sacked him twice. And then he's put a link to Stoke's website where they are advertising a role for an electrical maintenance engineer. So who needs another Sparky?
Really good.
Fantastic. Well done.
If you corrected that yourself, and it's not a real vacancy, that's still very good.
Great work. Yeah. So Phil Gidman's back in touch. He was the giddy man from last week, and he appears to have calmed down a little bit. He says, finally calming down and cutting the dairy out of my diary.
He
said diary, yeah, which I edited out and have still said anyway. It obviously meant diet.
You mugged yourself off, right, mate?
I have, yeah. Added on to that, regular night terrors that involve a 2-1 loss to Panama. So still slightly incoherent from Phil Gidman, but he is calming down. That's good to know. Let us know how you get on.
Can I stick in a highlight of the week in the form of a story from the Irish Cup?
Oh, yes, please do.
Big fan of this. I'm sure you're both aware of this one. Matthew Tipton, the boss of Warren Point Town, He's apologised to his own players after he was sent off during the Irish Cup defeat to Cliftonville. The former Alderman Macclesfield Town striker brought himself on in the closing stages of the fifth round tie, but he's booked twice in the space of 3 minutes.
I saw it.
The interview is incredible. They ended up losing the match. Thanks for that. Thanks for that.
The best thing about it, so he's a bit of a chunky lad, and you know, and I am too. So I'll say that.
Yeah, but he's a footballer though, man.
Yeah, true.
Player manager.
But the best thing about it is that he obviously gets booked twice very quickly. And the post-match interview, he's interviewed on the pitch, he goes, well, I thought I'd bring myself on for a bit of experience and a bit of guile.
Guile?
Guile.
Did he mean guile from Street Fighter 2?
Bloodying people.
Just sonic booming all over the place.
Yeah.
Andres Villas-Boas as well. He's finished the first stage of the Dakar Rally in 42nd place. So well done him.
It's great because,
imagine
I'll tell you
that,
what.
Gravel vice.
The headline to this story, which came out at the end of last year, is Andre Villas-Boas quits as manager of Shanghai to drive in Dakar Rally. And the quote is, so I got in touch with Team Overdrive, and here I am. To which all I could think of was, free love on the free love. Free. It's the most midlife crisis I've ever heard of.
Fantastic.
It's a bit Phil Brown. Yeah, you never want to do something, and then someone in response says to you, that's a bit Phil Brown. Yeah.
Almost weekly with me. Yeah. I'm always buying nonsense I don't need. Can I make a little prediction? I did this on Twitter, and I'm fairly certain it's going to happen in the next season or so. Someone, because you did the Jose Mourinho out by summer, is that looking any closer to fruition, Luke?
Oh, they had a routine win in the cup, didn't they? It was a bit disappointing. But I mean, who knows? Maybe the Conte thing will make him blow his top.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be due to results. This will be due to some sort of internal bust up, won't it?
Okay, yeah, right, I'll take it, mate.
There we go.
Yeah.
It's a proud club of proud traditions. I think that at some point in the next season, someone, some TV company or whoever it is, going to broadcast a live football match in portrait mode from an overhead camera angle.
Why are you suggesting that?
For a phone.
He's predicting it, not suggesting it. That's the real madness here.
Can't you already get a tactic cam?
What?
You can already get tactics cam, but I don't know if it's in portrait or not.
No, but I mean, like in a portrait mode football match will be broadcast. So there we go.
Some of the things that go through your mind are unreal. Well, you know.
Portrait thing will be seen.
Yeah. Well, let's see what goes through your mind right now, Luke Moore. When they're going for gold.
Did I get it last week? I did, didn't I?
Did get it last week. You got it quite early as well, if I remember rightly.
Yeah.
Anderson.
This one comes from Matt. Thank you, Matt, for your clues. Clue number one, basically, if you've not heard Going for Glory before, basically what happens is I give a load of clues out pertaining to a mystery footballer and you guys have to guess who it is by saying stop.
And thanks to Jermaine Jenner at the BBC for letting us license this from
exactly, yes, that's right.
Much appreciated, Jermaine.
Clue number one, I was born on the 7th of November 1978 in Oldenzaal, the Netherlands.
Stop. I'll have a guess at Aaron Winter.
Incorrect, oh, but lovely nice to hear his name.
Stop. Brian Roy.
No, not Brian Roy.
Nice.
It could have been Forest related. Number two, I'm not that joined up. Number two, I made 435 career league appearances, scoring 173 goals.
Okay, it's not bad.
Stop. Decent.
Roy Mackay.
No, not
he'd have probably
Mackay.
Got more than that.
Roy Mackay is a good shout as well.
Three, I made 19 appearances for my country, scoring 3 goals.
Stop. I'm going to go for Klaus-Jan Huntelaar.
Incorrect.
Oh, I don't think he'd be that old, would he?
I think he's probably got more goals than that. He definitely scored more than that.
He would have played more than that for the Netherlands. Stop. Pierre Van Hooijdonk.
Incorrect.
He's older than
Pierre
that.
Van Hooijdonk. I was named in the 23-man squad for my country at the 2006 World Cup in Germany.
Stop. Jan Venegor of Hesselink.
It's Jan Venegor of Hesselink!
Yes! Well done, Jim.
Wow!
Good guess.
As well as appearing in that World Cup for my national team, I appeared in the Austrian, Dutch and English top flights. I once received used toilet paper in the post from an angry fan of my club's rivals.
Ooh.
I retired from professional football at the age of 33 and my name has famously caused some difficulties with shirt printings.
Couple of good, two or three good seasons at Celtic and he's not been mentioned
really
in that as well.
Well, it's at the end. But
Okay.
I was going to just cleave them off for time. But now I'm explaining it. So, there
so
you
if
go.
Anything, it's thank, just more time.
Thank you for that, Luke Miller.
No worries.
So,
thanks to Jan.
Thanks to Jan and Matt.
Thanks to Matt Venegor of Hesselink for suggesting it.
Well, it's been a rip-roaring weekend of FA Cup action. Thank you for joining us for the Football Ramble Monday show. But we'll be back on Friday for the preview show where we'll be no doubt to talking about the Carabao Cup and looking forward to the weekend of Premier League action and further afield as well.
And don't forget, on Wednesday on the continent, we'll be back with loads of news. I expect I'm I can't really predict the future, but I imagine we'll be talking about the Seville derby.
Yes.
And about Diego Costa. do tune in by searching on the continent, wherever you get your pods.
He looked so confused when he got sent off. Yeah. Right, let's get out of here, guys. Jim, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Luke, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
And I'll be back on Friday too. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.